Funny Books with Aaron, Polly, and Wayne. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
And this is Wayne.
Good morning, guys.
Hello. Morning.
Very excited for today.
Are you?
I am, because we get to talk about Superman.
It's going to be all Superman all the time. I mean, this is almost reminiscent of a, Superman with Aaron and Polly episode.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I would say we haven't done one of those in a while, but we are today.
Yeah. It's very exciting. Very exciting. You know, to have old Big Blue be all we talk about today.
Yeah. I mean, there were a number of Superman comic releases this week. And of course, the release of the Superman movie from James Gunn, starting off the new DCU cinematic universe or whatever. So, I mean, lots of Superman. It was a big week for Superman.
It was. Yep. It was a big week.
So, you know, I think, you know, kind of starting with the comic books, it's interesting. So I did not read Action Comics, but I read Superman Treasury Edition 2025. I read Absolute Superman. And even though we're not going to talk about it, I read that We Are Yesterday crossover between Justice League Unlimited and World's Finest. So I got like three very different interpretations, four if you include the movie, of Superman this week. And it was like, oh, okay, I got to keep them all straight. But Absolute Superman is so very different than our regular Superman. It's, you know, it's especially in some of the side characters like Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen. It's such a different book, but I'm enjoying it. I think Absolute Superman is still, I've been reading. I have not read every Absolute book. I'm been reading Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, basically. But I'm not reading Flash, Green Lantern. I'm way behind on Martian Manhunter. But I'm reading the Trinity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, Aaron, you read Absolute Superman also this week, right?
Yeah. And I'm really enjoying the book. It's so different from any other Superman book that we've been offered over the years. It is a Superman who, you know, grew up in his younger years on Krypton, as opposed to being launched as a baby or a fetus or a genetic code into space. He was a pre-adolescent, right? You know, he got to run across the purple fields of Krypton. So I kind of dig that about the book, because it makes him more connected to his Kryptonian parents than he would otherwise be. And he's got a really different power set, really reliant on the technology of his Kryptonian suit. And so I kind of dig all that, but he's still at his core, he's Superman. You know, he's got that moral center. It's a little different than the one that we see him with, where it's rooted in, you know, Kansas farm values, right? It's, you know, but it, he has a core, Kryptonian moral code, and, it's kind of nice to see. And I'm enjoying how he's interacting with all of the terrible, terrible, terrible humans he encounters.
Yeah, it's interesting. Reading this book, it's, you know, like I said, the three Absolute books I'm reading, Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman, it's hard to believe they take place in the same...
Agreed. They do not feel like they occur in the same world.
Batman is probably the closest to, like, the regular DC universe, right? And that, you know, Gotham's still Gotham. It's just that the characters in it basically grew up differently. But this, we haven't really seen Metropolis, you know, and it's so very science fiction-y. It almost feels like we're looking into a future, you know, like a future world almost.
The Superman book feels, like a little post-apocalyptic. Right.
Almost. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, because everything you see is a war zone. And I know that's just because of, you know, where each one of these, you know, encounters is set, because that's where Superman's gravitating to so that he can, you know, relieve the suffering. But, you know, you kind of wind up with this warped view of what the world is. And of course, things are being manipulated from a distance it feels by Darkseid. And of course, Darkseid's all about war and apocalypse. And so, you know, this is, it feels like this is Darkseid reshaping the world in his image, you know.
Well, and I didn't read this issue yet, but like in the Absolute Superman books, there's worldwide organizations out there, and it just feels bigger than the Batman book.
Right.
It does. And, you know, they do mention it. I think, no, it was in the Batman book they mentioned Metropolis, which is, it's not like they've mentioned Metropolis in the Superman book, which is interesting. But, I mean, I think we'll, I think we are definitely eventually going to get there. I think we're playing the long game on, I mean, I don't think we're going to get these characters back into, like, working at the Daily Planet and stuff like that. But I do think we'll see an interpretation of Metropolis at some point. What I find interesting is that the main villain of this book is Ra's al Ghul.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like this. I will say, I don't like this design.
Well, because he's more Vandal Savage.
Yeah. I was like, is it Vandal Savage or Ra's al Ghul? He's very Vandal Savage.
Yeah. I think they're both. It almost feels like Vandal Savage, and he's adopted the name Ra's al Ghul.
And maybe that's what we'll find out.
Yeah.
You know, over the course of the storyline. I'm also curious about the mysterious head of the Omega Men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a female leading the Omega Men,
Primus,
but we don't know her real name.
Her real name is Sarah Primus.
Oh, is it?
No, I'm just making
that. I'm like, did I miss that somewhere? That seems stupid. I'm just wondering if it's Talia, if it's, you know, the absolute Talia al Ghul, because she's very hell bent on killing Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah.
And it kind of feels like maybe that's what they're building towards.
I had kind of a thought while I was reading that this week in the context of the Superman movie that we're going to talk about here in just a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I was like, you know, the original Omega Men series from the 90s, I'm sorry, the 80s, is one of my favorite books. I love the, you know, far off space adventures of these aliens, you know, fighting a war against the Citadel. And I was like, you know what? It's kind of DC's answer to the Guardians of the Galaxy. And now they've got James Gunn over there, who's in charge of the DC films. I would love to see a straight up adaptation of Omega Men by James Gunn.
I wouldn't say no.
Yeah, same. I just, that would be awesome. Awesome.
Well, maybe. Well, yeah, he goes into those deep cut characters sometimes. And we'll talk about that here in a bit as well in relation to Superman.
Well, you know, the thing that drives me crazy about the Absolute book, the Absolute Superman book, is how Jason Aaron, you know, takes a given name that we are used to, you know, Ra's al Ghul is this thing over in the regular DC universe, but here in Absolute Superman, he seems a lot more like Vandal Savage, right? He's a very different sort of character, and it's not like he immerses himself in a Lazarus pit. It's like Lazarus is within him, right? It's all very different, and, you know, different interpretations. So the Omega Men isn't this, you know, far off rebel group of aliens from different worlds, you know, fighting against a, you know, fascist oppressor. It is a militia group, you know, a subversive militia group, maybe a terrorist group, you know, here on Earth. So, you know, they it's never what you expect. Right. So Lois Lane isn't a reporter for a large metropolitan newspaper. You know, she is, you know, she works for the military. It's just, you know, it is really unsettling when you feel like you know a thing and you know nothing. The names mean nothing. Yeah. And so you've got to relearn what all these names mean.
Yet somehow the characters are recognizable, right? And maybe right. Not visual, well, even visually, but like personality wise, like Lois is still who she is at the core. Jimmy, same. Superman, same. He's just been raised in this war-torn world.
Yeah. I would say that the core concepts are there, right?
Yeah.
And it's all, you know, everyone is responding to a world that Darkseid made, right? Because this is the Darkseid universe. And so, you know, it's fascinating, but at the same time, deeply unsettling as you're trying to, you know, get your bearings and to understand who to root for. Yeah, it's super challenging. And I like that. I like the challenging aspect of the story.
And I'm very, you know, like I'm looking forward to seeing where this story goes. And, you know, obviously the All-In saga continues. Like at the back of the book, it mentions it started with Absolute Power, then went to All-In Special, continues throughout the pages of Justice League Unlimited, and then into We Are Yesterday. And then starting this month, July, you know, we get the start of this Legion of Darkseid storyline, July through September in Superman, you know, building to a fall Darkseid related event. And I'm very curious at what point these, I mean, I'm not rushing it because we're only 9 issues in on the Absolute Universe, but I'm very curious to see how these characters interact with the DCU proper, because they're just so vastly different.
Well, I was glad that they put the timeline in at the back of the book, because I'd forgotten that we were in a big timeline. I forgot that All In meant anything.
Right. It's been 9 months, right, since they've really kind of, other than the fact that we're living in the world, very little has been referenced of Darkseid and, you know, what started that. A little bit in that We Are Yesterday crossover, again, between Justice League Unlimited and World's Finest, which I've only got one issue left. I'm actually quite enjoying. You know, it's Gorilla Grodd is the big bad, and it features a lot of time travel. So ultimately the story of it is that Gorilla Grodd has found the ability to time travel and has plucked the Legion of Doom from early on in their careers and brought them to present day. And so there's a lot of time hopping. But you know, it's fun, and I'm enjoying that. But this All In timeline, certainly there, DC does every few months remind us, yes, we are absolutely building to something. So we'll see what Legion of Darkseid looks like, because that's coming out in just very soon, I think.
Paul, that story sounds really interesting. What books is it running through?
Justice League Unlimited and World's Finest. The first chapter of it, I think the first two chapters of it were like in annuals. But it's World's Finest and Justice League Unlimited. It's because those are the two books that are written by Mark Waid.
I wonder if they'll release it in trade, being across different books.
I've got to imagine they will. So the first issue was was World's Finest issue 38, was the first book in the series. So worth checking out. I am enjoying it, and I'm enjoying seeing those super friends-esque designs of the DC villains, you know, plucked out of time. But I am actually not currently reading, speaking of Mark Waid, you know, he's the writer on both of those books. I'm not reading Action Comics, so that one I believe is set in the past. We've got a Superboy focused storyline there. Why don't you guys tell me a little bit about that one?
Remind me why you're not reading it, Paul.
I don't know, honestly. No specific reason other than, you know, I've been hesitant on Mark Waid books, DC Mark Waid books recently. And so even though, you know, I hopped into this World's Finest storyline, I'm generally not reading either one of those books. So I was kind of waiting to see what you guys thought of it. And, you know, maybe I'll get caught up.
Okay. Wayne, continue.
I would say I think Paul's a fool for not reading it, but...
Yeah, it's a fool! A fool, Paul!
I don't know if I've ever told you guys, but one of the things I've always disliked about the idea of a Superboy that is Clark... is I really enjoy Lois being the one that gives him the name Superman.
Did they fix that for you this issue?
They did. They found a way to give me a Superboy that is Clark that still gets his name from Lois. I appreciated that so much. And that's such a thing that Mark Waid would do as well. Because he is someone that loves that core of the character, that I could see him going out of his way to find a way in the story to have Lois, in this case, as a little girl on a tour, give him the name. I appreciated that so much, Aaron. It made my reading of the book. Because the one thing that was keeping me from loving the concept... they fixed.
Yeah, I saw that in the book this week. And I'm like, oh, I think that's going to make Wayne happy. So I'm glad that it did. I rather enjoy Mark Waid's telling of Superboy. Superboy is one of those kinds of things that I like. Superboy, you know, Clark Kent Superboy. I just don't like how it works into continuity. You know, I think I prefer Superman revealing himself as an adult versus as a teenager. Because I just don't, you know, it's just not realistic, he said about a man who flies. but it is fun. And I enjoy that about this book. I enjoy, you know, the elements of him, you know, being in high school and, you know, getting flustered when, you know, Lana returns to school and she's had her teenage growth spurt and looks more woman than teenager, right? I think that's hilarious seeing how that flusters Clark. I dig all of that. And I also enjoy seeing Clark learn lessons that, you know, when we see him as, you know, full grown Superman, he's already learned those lessons, but we're getting to see him learn them here, you know, in how he deals with anger. And, you know, he threatens the contractor who didn't do quality work when building the fire suppression system at the high school and nearly gets a bunch of kids killed. And, you know, Superman comes in, or Superboy shows up and, you know, bullies him, essentially. And, you know, rightly so. I mean, you know, the guy's a dirtbag. But then, you know, he returns to apologize because he shouldn't have threatened him physically. You know, he's like,
I loved that.
Yeah. And I just love that he's accountable. Right.
He apologizes after going to tell the police. And
that's right. Now the police are on their way. Yeah. But, you know, I dig that. I think that it is a very thoughtful story. And something that I very much enjoyed. And, you know, we're two issues in. Paul, you still got plenty of time to jump in. We'd love to have you over here in the cool yeah. waters.
The cool kids section. Cool. All right.
That's right. That's
yeah,
right.
I feel like it is all of my problems with a teenage Superboy. It's like Mark Waid has read my mind and is going down the list and checking them all off.
Well, you know, he's such a big Superman fan. You know that he's just sat there the whole time going, you know, these are the problems. Here's how I'll fix them.
Yeah. Like one of them that I've always had a problem with is how do they not figure out that Clark is Superman if Superboy has existed in Smallville and had all of this time? Well, this version of Superboy, as soon as he becomes Superboy, he starts going around the country, traveling and showing up in different cities. Yep. He doesn't just exist in Smallville. He's, you know, in Metropolis. He's in Gotham. He's in LA. And he's, you know, going out a couple days a week to different cities. I absolutely love that as a way to deal with the fact that, you know, he's not always in Smallville. So you can't associate him with Clark.
Yeah, it's a good book. It's a good book. I really have no complaints.
Same here.
Well, I spent my hard-earned cash instead on the Superman Treasury Edition 2025.
$15.
My hard-earned $15.
I am really looking forward to hearing your opinion on this book, Paul, because it's a Treasury book. I want it in physical copy. So I went out to a comic shop this week, and they were sold out. So I went to another one, and they were sold out. And then the next day, I went to another one. I've been to three comic shops. And there they told me basically, like, well, we didn't think it would sell very much, so we only bought a couple copies, and it sold out right away. So I haven't bought this book, but I want to buy the book, but nobody has the book.
Well, if you can find the book, maybe it'll be on Amazon or something like that. I highly recommend seeking it out. So I did not purchase this in print. I don't know, you know, how, you know, what the dimensions exactly are, other than I believe it's like an oversized, oversized book.
It's, you know, supposed to be a big magazine size.
Okay. And I can definitely tell it's a different size, because digitally, you know, digitally it's an interesting read, in that usually I like to read my digital comics full page, like I'm reading a comic, right? But for this one, because of the format of the book, reading it that way, the text was really small, or maybe I'm just getting old. So I had to read this one in guided view, just because the text tended to be a little small. But so, you know, one of my fondest memories, one of my fondest Superman stories was Superman the Earth Stealers. And I don't know if you guys remember this one. It was written by John Byrne, had art by Kurt Swan and Jerry Ordway.
Yep, and ends up with Superman dragging the Earth back into place with his superpowers.
Mm-hmm. And it was published back in 1988, and it was a prestige format one shot back when those things cost $2.95. And just, you know, had this beautiful, beautiful painted cover. And, you know, like prestige format books like that, you know, that the late 80s, early 90s was definitely a good time for prestige format type books. You know, they had a lot of Elseworlds books were published in that format. The original Gotham by Gaslight was published in that format. But I definitely remember Superman the Earth Stealers, like specifically as, you know, very fond memories of that. And this book very much reminds me of that kind of story. So this is a one-shot story, 70 digital pages, but I've got to imagine it's probably about 80-something printed because there's a number of two-page spreads. And so the book is written by Dan Jurgens with art by Bruno Redondo. You know, Dan Jurgens, obviously we know who he is. He's been writing Superman for years, writing and drawing Superman. He also does a brief bit of Superman. You know, he does a couple of pages within the book. And so the story here is basically that, and it's very much in a not, it's a kind of in continuity, kind of out of continuity story, I would say, in that things happen in this book that definitely have not happened in the main DC continuity. However, you know, this is set when Jonathan Kent is still young. So this is not a teenage John Kent, which I will tell you, the continuity is a little bit shaky because at one point they go through the book and they have they reference that Jor-El came back as a villain, which happened during the Brian Michael Bendis arc on the book. I wish they had written that out of continuity, but they do reference it, that Jor-El's return. However, that happened in the same storyline in which Jonathan Kent became a teenager, right? Was taken away and came back fully grown. And so, like I said, continuity is a little shaky. Don't think too hard on it. That was really the only thing that I was like, wait, hold on. Those happened in the same storyline, yet this is the interpretation of Jonathan Kent I prefer anyway. So worked for me. But I thought this book was fantastic. You know, it is, you know, Earth is being invaded by Maxima and Cyborg Superman. You have appearances by many of DC's heroes, many of Superman's supporting cast. Of course, you get... you know, Bruno Redondo has won many awards for his work on Tom Taylor's Nightwing, and you get a lot of that here. Some beautiful, beautiful art on Superman. Of course, you get, you know, appearances by Nightwing and Batman and things like that. And, you know, there are, you know, definitely some moments in the book. And I don't want to go into too heavy into spoilers, but, you know, you'll notice something is up like early in the book. That, like, hold on, that didn't happen that way, and it's just interesting. I think it's a great book. It's if you like, I mean, of course, everyone on this podcast, longtime Superman fans, we love Dan Jurgens and his art and his writing. Bruno Redondo is a fantastic artist, and so it's a superstar team doing what they do on a beautiful Superman story. It is exactly what I wanted it to be, and I think it's absolutely worth picking up. Like I said, it's hard to necessarily recommend the digital edition, though I read it that way and certainly enjoyed the book, but it is also $15, so you may want to wait till it's on sale or try to find it in print like Wayne did, and you know, maybe I don't know, like maybe Amazon will sell it because it's that type of, you know, prestige edition type thing, but definitely worth seeking out.
Yeah, try to find it in print like me, but don't fail like me.
Yeah, don't be a failure like Wayne.
Yeah. Well, I plan to pick it up physically, just because it's in the Treasury size, and it's Bruno Redondo, and it's Dan Jurgens. I mean, you know, what's not to love there?
Yeah, exactly. There's literally nothing wrong with this book, other than the reference to Jor-El being a bad guy, because that storyline sucked.
Yeah, well, you know, all that Bendis stuff kind of blew, so.
Yeah.
Just saying. Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to picking that up. So, you know, we all saw the new Superman movie this week.
Yes.
In fact, that's why Andrew's not here. He hasn't seen it and he doesn't want to get spoiled yet. So he is living under a rock until he can make it to a movie theater.
Just to be clear, we're going to spoil this, right?
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
Okay, good.
Before we jump into the movie itself, tell me how you guys saw it. Where'd you see it? What kind of, you know, what kind of projection? Tell me, talk to me.
I saw an IMAX 2D showing on Tuesday. So I went to the Amazon Prime. So Amazon Prime had early showings on Tuesday night. I think it was 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So I got tickets for that showing, and it seemed sold out.
Mm-hmm.
Because I skipped a seat in between the next party when I purchased my tickets, and someone sat in it, and I'm like,
what a bastard.
So, you know, that's always a sign that the showing sold out when the one seats are selling.
Right.
The single seats are selling.
Yeah. So I also went on Tuesday, went to a Amazon screening. In my case, I didn't do IMAX. I did what we have is a super screen,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of like IMAX in that it's huge. It's just different sound technology and all. And I did that because the seats are actually more comfortable in there.
Yeah, I will say that, IMAX, you know, it's been a while since I've seen like a straight IMAX movie, and it was like AMC, and it was like old school movie theater seats, not like the recliners. I'm like,
Yeah, that's why I don't do IMAX here, because they have the old school seats, and I want the big, the Dream Lounger is what they call them here.
Right.
That's the seats I want. So I do the super screens instead of the IMAX, and it's still a much larger screen than a regular movie theater.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, and you?
I went and saw it yesterday. Wasn't able to go see it earlier. My wife had a surgical procedure earlier in the week. She's fine. Just eyes. Had to get her eye replaced with a monkey eye. And, everything's fine. You know, she's seeing out of the monkey eye just fine. Though apparently it was the eye of a murder monkey. So, you know, all she can see is murder. You know,
sleep with one eye open, Aaron.
That's right. That's right. So anyway, I went yesterday after her follow-up visit. And so I'd never been to this theater before. And I went to a different theater because I needed a showing like at around 12:30. And it was the only one in the area that had a non-3D film. Everything else going on around that time, within reasonable driving distance, was a 3D showing. So I went to this theater I hadn't been to before. You know, it's advertised that it is the movie theater up at the mall. I had never been to it, never been to that mall before, but drove over there. Couldn't find a direct entrance to the theater at the mall, but you know, that's not unusual. A lot of movie theaters, you have to walk into the mall to get into the theater. So parked the car, went into the mall, looked at the directory, followed the directory to where it was, and there was no movie theater there. What the fuck? So I go back to the directory, look again. I'm like, okay, it's supposed to be right here to the left of Dillard's, and you know, there's nothing there at the left of Dillard's. And then I realize that it's not telling me that it, you know, to the left of Dillard's in the mall. It's to the left of Dillard's outside the mall. And so I get back in the car, drive around to the other side of the mall, and it's not in the mall parking lot at all. It is, you know, on the other side of the street and, you know, within sight of the mall, but in no way, shape, or form in the mall or at the mall. In fact, not even on the street it's advertised to be on. It's on a completely different street altogether. And then it was challenging to find the front door because it's facing the wrong direction. So this is all very sketchy as I'm getting ready to go in. And I was just like, I don't have a good feeling about this at all. It was a Marcus Theater. They do the super screen, like Wayne was describing, and they have the Dream Loungers. And while I had really bad vibes going in, thinking, you know, this is going to be a horrible experience, it was actually a very nice experience. The theater was comfortable. It was one of those movie tavern sort of places. So, you know, I ordered lunch. Lunch was surprisingly good. And I enjoyed the movie. You know, enjoyed the movie watching experience, I should say. It was
the biggest surprise about that story to me is that you have malls that are still have stores in them.
I was amazed. The last mall that I was in was like half vacant, and this one was full. I couldn't get over it. I have lived near this mall for a year now, or almost a year. And I didn't see any vacancies in the mall, and there were actual people in the mall.
Because when you guys come to Michigan, malls are thriving in the Metro Detroit area. Thriving.
There is, I think, one mall here that is not like a ghost town.
Right.
And one of the comic shops I tried going to was in a mall. And I go in, and it's one of the few stores that isn't gone. Like, everything is gone there, including some of the big anchor stores.
Yeah.
So, like, the mall is basically a triangle where you got to one part of the triangle by going through the anchor store. That's not there. So you have to go all the way around now to get to those stores. And that wasn't happening.
Yeah, I was surprised to see how well this mall was doing. I was very surprised. But anyway, saw previews. I thought this is the first time I've seen the extended most recent Fantastic Four preview in a theater. I'm super excited about Fantastic Four coming up.
Did the preview or the teaser trailer for The Odyssey?
Yes.
No.
Yes. Looks hot. Ah.
Yeah, it's the new Christopher. I mean, obviously, the Iliad and the Odyssey. This is a new Christopher Nolan movie. Looks like it stars Tom Holland.
Yeah.
In the trailer, you only see Tom Holland and John Bernthal, but Matt Damon, I know, is also in it. So, I mean, I think it's a Christopher Nolan movie. Of course, it'll have an all-star cast.
Yeah. Yeah. Michael Caine will be in it. Michael Caine.
Yeah. Michael Caine.
But yeah, I'm excited about The Odyssey. So, that new movie with Leonardo DiCaprio where he doesn't look like Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, yeah.
I forget what it's called, but it looked pretty good. So.
Yeah, I don't remember what it's called now that you mention it.
But yeah, I had some decent previews, things I'm excited to see. So, you know, good stuff.
So, you know, we've talked about our experiences. I'm very curious what you guys thought of the movie itself.
Wayne, you want to go first?
Sure, I can go first. I absolutely love this movie. I'm going to see it again after we finish recording. So for my second viewing, I have been describing this movie as unapologetically Superman, where some versions of Superman seem to be ashamed of their source material. This is a movie that absolutely embraces it. I have issues. I mean, it's not a perfect movie by any means, you know, and there are some things that bug me. But for me, it captured the feel of the character, and I left still excited. I bought as much merch as they had at that movie theater, which was a cup that you press up the Superman shield, and it glows, as well as a little plush Krypto. They were sold out of some of the other merch, so I'm hoping to get some more merch today when I go back to the theater.
Hilarious. They were doing the suggestive sale to me when I ordered my lunch, you know, and by the way, I was wearing my Action Comics Superman in the Supermobile shirt, whacking Amazo in the head with the arms of the Supermobile. And so the guy's like, just really leaning in. We've got some merch you might be interested in.
Yeah. See, I wore my Krypto from the new movie shirt.
Uh-huh.
Because obviously I have a Krypto shirt already, because of course I'm me.
Right. Well, I would echo, I think, everything Wayne said. I also am a gigantic dyed-in-the-wool Superman guy, and I absolutely loved this movie. It's not a perfect movie, like Wayne said, but my issues with it are far overwhelmed by the things I loved about the movie. I will be absolutely honest with you and say I cried three times in this movie. I'm so glad that I had tissues there, because I did. I wept three different times in the movie. In fact, I the woman sitting next to me, I felt for certain was going to lean over and go, "You okay?" when Lois tells Superman, you know, she says, I question everything. You know, I question authority. That is who I am. I question everything. Good, bad, ugly. I question it all. And she, you know, she says, but you don't do that. You know, you accept, you know, you start the day, you know, that people are good. And, you know, she's just talking about how positive and optimistic Clark is. And that just really got me. I mean, it just, it is so accurate and true to the character that he's always above the line and he always assumes positive intent. And he, you know, he's not naive. He's not an idiot. But, you know, he starts off assuming that everyone is dealing from a good place. And that's what was important to me about this movie, that it be hopeful, that it be optimistic, that, yeah, you know, we have to fight some darkness, but we don't have to let the darkness in. I really, really was refreshed by how genuinely earnest Superman was. And I wasn't sold on David Cornswell when they cast him and seeing some of the pictures. And, you know, there are moments where I'm like, I don't know this guy. But I thought he did a marvelous job of embodying the best traits of Superman.
Yeah, there's so much I want to talk about. But,
yeah,
Paul, what was your impression?
So let me preface my impression by saying that just like Aaron and Wayne, I am a lifelong Superman fan. You know, he is my favorite comic book hero, has been since I was a little boy. You know, diehard Superman guy. I did not actually care for this movie. I feel like I am the only, well, Jen also. I feel like Jen and I are the only people in America who have not enjoyed this movie.
The Snyder fans don't like it. And
no, here's the thing. Don't get me wrong. I will say, I love Man of Steel. I do love Man of Steel. I'm aware of its faults. I'm aware of the faults of the films that came after it. But of the, you know, of Man of Steel, of that trilogy, Man of Steel, Batman versus Superman, and Justice League. I mean, Man of Steel is my favorite, and I do love that movie. I will say there are aspects of Superman that I really did love. Primarily, not Superman. You know, like I loved Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen. I love, especially Jimmy Olsen. I thought he was a standout. Mr. Terrific, I was about to say fantastic. You know, Mr. Terrific. I thought the interpretation of Mr. Terrific in this movie was just so well done. I feel for me, where I struggled with this movie is I felt like they didn't know how to trim out their ideas, and they just kind of threw every idea they had in one movie, and that definitely worked for some people. For me, it felt overstuffed and a little dumb in parts, and I struggle with that. I almost, you know, feel like I need to give it another shot. I mean, I went in the right mindset, but like I will say, I genuinely struggled with just how chaotic this movie was, you know, just how much they fit into the movie, you know, the random things they threw in, like, okay, here's this, you know, this river, like Lex Luthor's pocket universe, which feels like a wasted opportunity to just have made that, you know, Apocalypse, you know, but so Lex Luthor's pocket universe that has this like reality bending river, you know, in the middle of it. And then, you know, at the end, and then you've got black holes, and then they introduce Superman's clone in the last 10 minutes of the movie. And I'm like, okay, like it. And then you've got the monkeys posting on social media. I'm like, okay,
there's the
like
monkeys posting on social media was killing me.
Hashtag super shit. Oh, you know, God. And you've got, you know, Metamorphos baby. And I'm like, it just felt like they just kind of like just kept throwing everything they could in this movie. And I'm like, I would just like just trim it back a little bit in my, you know, that's how it hit me. Like, just trim it back just a little bit, you know, give me a little bit more time. Like, you cast a great actor as Perry White.
Didn't use him at all. That is one of my complaints. If you're going to put Wendell Pierce in a movie, fucking use him.
Yeah.
And I mean, he did, he got to do almost nothing, and certainly nothing meaningful.
Yeah. And Hawkgirl. I mean, I thought the actress who looked like Shayera, Uh-huh. I thought, you know, she in flight, great, but really nothing really to her other than, you know, this is Hawkgirl and she flies and screams and beats things.
And she's like, got a mace.
Yeah, she's got a mace. Like, there really wasn't much to her character at all. But obviously, they fleshed out Guy Gardner a bit, you know, just because Nathan Fillion really brings Nathan Fillion-ness uh-huh. to the role. And I didn't mind that character anywhere near as much as I thought I would when I saw them visually.
I thought for sure he was going to die in the first act. I just really, really? Had no, I felt like it was stunt casting on James Gunn's part. And I just thought for sure that we would see James Gunn in the movie for all of 10 minutes and he'd be out. You know, that we would have seen everything that there was to see of him in the trailers. In fact, I'll say one of the things I'm really pleasantly surprised by is that most of the stuff we see in the trailers happens in the first 5 minutes of the movie. I love this. I love that he gave us, you know, enough to get a sense of the movie and that the rest of the movie gets to be a surprise. That I did enjoy that part of it.
Yeah. I was shocked when the movie started and it starts with that scene of him crashing, you know, injured near the fortress.
Yeah.
I thought that was going to be mid or near end of the movie.
Yeah.
And that is the very beginning of it.
Well, and I love, you know, James Gunn said years ago, you know, I'm tired of seeing Superman origin stories. I'm tired of seeing Spider-Man origin stories. I'm tired of seeing Batman origin stories. And for them to start off with, you know, just a crawl in the first 30 seconds of the movie that tells you all you need to know about the setting, and you just fall right into Superman falling out of the sky, having gotten his ass kicked. I thought that was perfect. I mean, I love it.
Yep. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but that was also an issue. That was also a struggle I had with the film, is that the film starts with, you know, like 3 minutes ago or whatever, Superman right. lost his very first battle, right? He has debuted him, you know, as Superman 3 years ago. 3 minutes ago, he lost his first battle. And then for the next 2 hours, he proceeds to lose every battle and get his ass kicked pretty much the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, was it just coincidence that like... That was the first one he lost, because he sure gets his ass kicked a lot in this film. And, you know, like I was waiting, and I know it's just conflict, right? You know, it's Superman at his lowest, and he's, you know, bringing, you know, coming back to his comeback. But for me, I was like, I was a little tired of seeing Superman get his ass kicked the entire movie.
So that is a common sentiment that I see online. It's one I have argued with people about. Part of that is, this is the first time he's lost a fight, of course. So for me, that means he hasn't had to learn to fight. He's been able to rely on his powers and just, you know, win. But he got beat by somebody who is a clone of himself and Lex Luthor, who is, you know, so intelligent he's found ways to watch Superman and see his fighting style. It makes sense to me that that's who's beating him. The kaiju fight people talk about, he could have taken that kaiju out in any moment. What we see in the kaiju fight is him doing everything he can to not hurt the kaiju, because he wants to take it back to study it, put it in an intergalactic zoo, find ways to beat it without hurting it. But also, he is so worried about collateral damage that he's trying to rescue everybody. And because of that, he's holding himself back so much. He wasn't beaten by the kaiju. He wasn't beaten up by the kaiju. He could have taken it out at any time. He chose not to, because he wanted to save it, because he wants to save everyone.
Agreed. I didn't have a problem with any of that. I understand, you know, your frustration with it, Paul, but none of that was bothersome for me. My big issue with the movie, my most significant, it's not a big issue for me, but it was my most significant issue, were his parents.
Yes.
I really did not care for how simple Martha and John seem, particularly the first time we see them on screen.
But on the phone.
Like. Uh-huh. And they just seem like bumpkins. And
yeah. Now they seem to me. Instead of bumpkin, because I've heard a lot of people say they seemed like hicks or too much. Like, I got senile out of it is what I got. Mm-hmm. And I felt like they did manage to redeem Pa, but they never redeemed Ma.
No. And what I disliked about, in particular about Jonathan's portrayal was that he seemed weak. And, you know, he's a farmer, works the farm every day, farmer all of his life. And there are many things that could be, but he would not be physically weak. And he just seemed soft. And, you know, I appreciated that he, you know, he's described as mush because he's just very sentimental. And that's fine. I like that depiction that he's, you know, he's a guy with genuine feelings. I just didn't care for how physically soft he was. And he does get some redemption because you get to hear his wisdom. And one thing, it was like James Gunn had been sitting at my house for years, because one thing that has always irritated the living snot out of me is that Superman goes and sits in his Fortress of Solitude, whether it's in the movies or cartoons or comic books, whatever way we're telling the story, Superman goes and sits in his Fortress of Solitude, and he only has representation of his biological parents at the fortress. There is nothing of Mom, Pa there. It's like, you know, they are his parents outside the fortress, but inside the fortress, it's just, you know, Jor-El and Lara. At the end of the movie, there's representation, you know, of Martha and John. And I loved it. I mean, I was so thrilled to see that, his real parents, the parents who raised him and gave him his moral core, are the folks that he is soothed by and that he is remembering and honor in the fortress. I just freaking love that.
Yeah, that was my biggest complaint, was the Kent, the direction they went with him.
Yeah.
I went in concerned about some things. Like, I was excited to go see it, but I've never been a big fan of Mr. Terrific outside of being a supporting character, and they made me love the character with this interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
He was amazing and stole scenes he was in.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Guy Gardner in the pictures we saw looked ridiculous.
Right.
And I was worried about Nathan Fillion as Guy Gardner. He captured Guy Gardner's personality better than I could have ever imagined him capturing it. And yeah. I loved Guy in the movie, and I can't wait to see more of him as well. I went in expecting Crypto to be the highlight of the movie for me. And don't get me wrong, I loved Crypto in the movie. I got a little too much Crypto in the movie. I could have done with less Crypto.
The scene where Superman shows up at LexCorp, you know, knocks the door down, flips Lex's desk over, and, you know, is menacing Lex to tell him where Crypto is, because he feels like
the dog.
Yeah, where he feels like the dog's being tortured. Something terrible's happening to the dog. The dog is scared, you know, and Lex hadn't given anything up. And I'm like, here is the key difference between Superman, me, and Wayne. Because if Wayne or I were in that position, we just start pulling things off of Lex's body until he told us where the dog was, you know, whereas Superman, you know, he's going to go up to that line, but he's not going to cross that line. Whereas, you know, I would have started at fingers and worked my way up the guy's arm.
Well, and that was something else I loved about the story, is that Superman doesn't get defeated and arrested.
Yeah.
He chooses to turn himself in because it's the only way he can think to try to find out where Crypto is.
Yeah.
He is so worried about Crypto that he's willing to turn himself over just to try to find Crypto.
Yeah.
I loved that.
And it's not even his dog.
Yeah, it's not even his dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Superman. He's a good guy. He's a good guy. Yeah.
People have made fun of one of the scenes in there that I just loved, and that was Superman saving the squirrel.
Oh, yeah.
Got such a kick out of that, because every life is important, but he didn't go out of his way to do it. He was already flying by. Why wouldn't he? Doesn't even think about it, because that's who he is. And that's what this movie did for me, is it captured the core of the character. This is a Superman that every life matters. He continues throughout the movie to go out of his way to save everyone. And that includes the villains. He tries to talk the villains down. He isn't about just punching them first. He wants to convince them to turn over a new leaf. And it's like, that's a version of Superman we haven't seen in a while.
The movie was advertised as having two end credit scenes, and it really felt like there were three. Right. You know, because you had the first, what I would call the first one, which is when Supergirl shows up. It's really after the movie, before credits rolled. But I would call it an end credit scene. And I enjoyed understanding how the two of them work together. it really kind of made it meaningful. That's the next movie, you know, now that we get to see Supergirl, and it explains, OK, well, where the hell was she going on? Well, she was partying. Yeah, because Supergirl's party girl.
Under a red sun, like in the comic story that it's based on.
Yeah.
I love that it explains why Crypto is such a poorly behaved dog.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
That it is her dog and she has no boundaries with him.
Right.
She's just smiling as he's bashing her into the floor.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Yeah. I also really enjoyed 4. You know, the robot 4, which, you know, you would assume would have been Kellex, but okay, he's 4. Until he gets his new name, Gary.
I say, were you hoping that he would name him Kellex?
Yeah, absolutely.
He's asking for a name, that was what I thought, is he's going to name him Kellex.
Yeah.
But no, he becomes Gary.
Gary.
For now.
At least it wasn't Greg, you know, from the accountant to where John Barenthal wants to name his corgi Greg.
Greg.
The second, what I would characterize as the second in credit sequence is what is it all of a sudden?
It was
Crypto sitting on the moon.
Moon scene where Crypto hugs him.
Uh-huh.
It was adorable, but really, does that worthy of a end credit scene?
And then, of course, the last one is, you know, Superman questioning the quality of Mr. Terrific's work. And then Mr. Terrific getting
a jerk.
Yeah. And just really recriminating himself, just beating himself up. Man, well, I'm so God. What I loved about the end credit scenes is that none of them promise another movie. None of them promise anything about future developments, bad guys, you know, any of that kind of stuff. They were just character moments. And I thought that is really nice to take some pressure off, you know, particularly in these early films coming out of the James Gunn shop for DC. I think that's awfully cool. That's what they did. Because I went in there full, we're going to see what James Gunn's got in store, see all the big promises, you know, and then hold him accountable when they don't pay off 10 years from now. But I liked that they were character.
Yeah, I really appreciated a lot of people dislike it and they dislike the language. But I loved seeing this, like, party girl Supergirl on the way out say, later, bitch.
Yeah, well, you know,
I thought that was like it's a way to differentiate the characters too.
Well, and I had a real hard time with the casting for Supergirl initially because I didn't understand where they were going with the character. I'm like, how is she going to be Supergirl? You know, that's not the kind of character she plays ever. You know, she always plays characters like we saw on screen this week, and now it makes sense. Oh, okay, that's where they're going with the character.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see that movie. I mean, I've always been excited for the Supergirl movie, but I even more so now because now I understand.
More excited knowing that they're going to bring Crypto into it now too, because Crypto's her dog.
Yeah, yeah,
and Lobo.
More Crypto and Lobo. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm excited. And so, Paul, I gotta know. You know, have you sat here just gritting your teeth listening to Wayne and I praise this movie that you so disenjoyed? Not at all.
I mean, a lot of people liked it, and I just feel like maybe I need to give it another try. I mean, I'm going to give it another try anyway. It's Superman, of course, right?
Mm-hmm.
I struggled to connect with it because, again, like I said, it just felt a little chaotic to me. I didn't like some of the story choices. I didn't like some of the casting choices. The one thing we haven't mentioned is You know, Jor-El and Lara, which is weird. You cast Bradley Cooper as Jor-El and then like some person I've never seen before as Lara.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, maybe she's an actress that I'm just not familiar with, but I'm like,
yeah,
it's Bradley Cooper and like who? but the, you know, and but the, you know, there's a twist in the film that they are sending, you know, Kal-El to planet Earth to take it over, which it's and not that, like we haven't seen that interpretation before. I just didn't care for it.
Yeah,
I like a, you know, a good Jor-El and Lara, and hey, it's a story choice. It's not, I'm not right. writing the story.
So I am with you there, Paul. That was a twist I didn't care for, but
that's straight out of All-Star Superman, though, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah, it's been forever since I read that, but
it was one that didn't bother me because yes, it's something we've seen before between Smallville, All-Star Superman. It's also, I'm a burn Superman guy, so yeah. I like a colder Krypton, and it didn't come off as evil as everyone seems to make it out to be to me. It came off as more practical. Like, Jor-El doesn't care about Earth. He cares about the legacy of Krypton. Of course he wants his son to go out there and have a harem and start making babies and, you know, bring back that legacy. That just, it made sense for a practical version to me. So I didn't hate it like a lot of people seem to, but I would have liked a different direction for Jor-El.
So yeah. One criticism that I heard a lot of going in was that the movie was too political. And you know, the only thing that struck me as political in the film was that Superman inserts himself into a one nation about to invade another nation. And, you know, he, this is what sets up the whole movie, is that Superman goes in and he tells the president of the aggressive country, you know, no. And if you proceed down this path, you're going to have to deal with me personally, yada, yada.
And that's not what people talk about when they say political.
Well, and the fact that he's an immigrant is mentioned. I wouldn't say that it's harped on. But I didn't find anything inherently political any more so than you would in any other story that involves human beings, right? I think people see what they want to see, and I was particularly offended when I saw that Dean Cain, TV Superman from Lois and Clark, said that Superman is too woke. And I'm like, fuck you, Dean Cain.
Dean Cain has been in the past 5 to 10 years or so, has been very outspoken with his political views to the point that he has become a non-entity for a lot of Superman fans.
Yeah.
Because of the way he speaks out about it, he is tarnishing his reputation as Superman. And we saw things like, I was floored that Fox News has this whole thing about being shocked that they're calling Superman an immigrant. It's like, yeah. Do you not understand the character?
And the creators?
He is a character yeah. made by two Jewish immigrants.
Yeah, based on the Moses story. You know, I mean, come on.
He is the immigrant's dream, the immigrant's fantasy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a part of the character that's always been part of the character. This isn't new.
Well, I expected, hearing all of this garbage about the wokeness of Superman, I expected to be preached to in the telling of this story. And I wasn't. And there wasn't anything overt. What there was optimism and assuming positive intent. And, you know, Superman expecting the best from all of us. And it just shows you that people see what they want to see. And sometimes people just want to see things that offend them.
Yeah.
I loved this movie. I hope that, Paul, you find an appreciation for it in a subsequent viewing. I would have seen it a second time. Yes, definitely see it again in theaters before it leaves. Cannot wait to have this streaming at home. I just freaking love this movie.
Yeah.
It is. I will tell you, I cannot remember a better experience in a movie theater in the last year. I can't think of a movie I have liked in a while. I was thoroughly satisfied. And here's the thing. I mean, I have a really hard time come about Act Two in superhero movies, where I have a devil of a time staying awake. You know, because they just get, generally get so leggy, and you put me in a dark place in a comfortable chair for any length of time, I will straight up fall asleep on you. And I was on the edge of my seat through the entire movie. I was wide awake. At no point did I go, God, I could use some sleep. And I only got like 4 hours of sleep Thursday night. So, I mean, I was primed to fall asleep in this movie, and I was on the edge of my seat the entire time.
I am not someone who sees movies in theater more than once, because you guys know I hate the movie theater experience.
Yeah.
I want to watch it at home. I am going back in the same week to watch this again.
Yeah.
It was everything I wanted it to be from the standpoint of a hopeful Superman, a Superman. The phrase I keep using is, it is unapologetically Superman. Yeah. It is a movie that is so proud of where it comes from and its comic origins that inspired it, particularly the stories. And All-Star Superman is a very fantastical Superman story. It is one that leans into that golden age,
yep,
and silver age, you know, fortress. And this is the same thing. It very much leans into all of those and is proud of it, not ashamed.
And thanks for bringing that up. I forgot to mention, I have been critical on this podcast about the interpretation of the Fortress of Solitude in Superman films since the Donner films. And I felt like the representation of the fortress in this movie was kind of a nice marriage between, you know, Golden and Silver Age fortress to the modern film version of the fortress. You know, there were it wasn't just all crystals. You know, there were actual things and technology there. The only thing I didn't like about it is that the door opens up right into the middle of everything. And I just felt like there should have been more of an entryway, perhaps a foyer, a greeting space where you can welcome people in, as opposed to it just walking right into the middle of the heart of the thing. But yeah, good movie.
Yeah, it's been an interesting summer for me, because I saw, you know, in the last 2 weeks, two of the three biggest releases of the summer have been released recently, Jurassic World and Superman, and both I found pretty disappointing. So fingers crossed, Fantastic Four turns it around, which brings us to next week's conversation, Aaron.
Oh, can't wait, Paul. We're going to read the 3-issue arc introducing, in which the Silver Surfer and Galactus were first introduced by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby in the pages of Fantastic Four. So we're going to talk about those books next week in preparation for Fantastic Four First Steps. Can't wait.
Yes. So we will be talking about that next week on the show. So if you want to get caught up on, you know, in time, it's they're available digitally, you know, via Comixology. I think it's Fantastic Four issues 48, 49, and 50 in that the volume right. One.
Yeah. Sounds right. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about Superman and all the Superman comics. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOMGeek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
All right, guys. Well, looking forward to chatting with you more about this week. Wayne, you and I'll have to, you know, at some point watch Superman together.
That would be nice.
Okay, there was a long pause there. I felt like you were having to think about it. Really want to hold hands with Aaron? is he going to steal my popcorn?
Yeah, no, you cut out of my mic, so I didn't want to talk over you.
Okay. Okay. All right. We'll see you next week, guys.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.